Welcome to the Bridge Podcast, a digital worship service. We know that walking with the Lord isn't easy, and we hope this show is a way to come alongside you and offer a little extra weekly encouragement. Most of the content for this show was originally created for our BridgeBox subscription service. For more information, go to missionusa.com/BridgeBox.
Because you con artists say that a good scam, only works when the victim is greedy. In other words, if you take a guy who already lusts after money, a good con artist can use that desire to manipulate him and rob him blind. The desire for money was there before the con man came along. He just used it. And so it is with all temptation. If we weren't already greedy, we couldn't be conned. With that in mind, the most important thing to know about temptation is that the enemy only tempts us with what we already want. Check out this verse from the book of James. When tempted, no one should say, "God is tempting me." For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when, by his own evil desires, he is dragged away and enticed. And that's James 1, 13 and 14. See, the temptation started with a desire that the person already had, just like a con. And we all have wrong stuff that we want, so we're all prime targets for temptation. But don't let this discourage you. A real man or woman of God flips the temptation around and uses it to become stronger. How, you ask? With everything the enemy puts before you to tempt you, there is a revelation. This is your weakness. This is one of the things most likely to take you out. Your desire for this thing is the most important thing for you to eliminate from your life. In other words, the devil has handed you a blueprint for what areas of your walk need work. A smart man takes that blueprint, sits down with a pastor or mentor, and starts developing a strategy on how to fix the gaps in the armor. Unfortunately, few of us treat temptation as a learning opportunity. Instead, our great desire for the thing, sex, money, approval, whatever, is what drives us to hold that serpent close, like a pet, even as it sinks its fangs into us. I don't know about you, but at points in my life, I've wanted to be tempted. I think that's true for a lot of us. And so it goes that we play all sorts of games with ourselves to make it seem reasonable to invite this temptation into our lives. Yes, I'm on a diet, but I'm told McDonald's has some lovely salads. Maybe I'll go take a look. Now, before we dive deeper into the subject, let's clarify some of the words that we're using and what they mean and don't mean. The English language seems to have a flair for the vague, because we use the same word temptation to describe someone who is trying to tempt us. She's such a temptress. And the feeling of wanting to buy into this temptation. She makes a very tempting offer. However, these are two very different deals. Jesus was tempted by the devil in the desert, but he was never tempted to buy into what the enemy was selling. That is, Jesus was tempted, but he wasn't tempted. So let's make it simple. The enemy is tempting all of us roughly all the time with something we already have a desire for. However, our response to those temptations can vary quite a bit. Sometimes the temptation is a bit too obvious. The old buddy who's just calling to see if we want to go to the strip club. Yes, some part of us does, but it's such an obvious move by the devil that we reject it out of hand. Other times, our desires get inflamed to the point of total lust. It feels like it's just too good to resist. But we muster the strength or the gritted teeth to reject it, at least in the moment. And in other cases, we just fully backslide. We've all done it, so there's no shame here. One of the enemy's favorite lies is, wanting it is the same as falling for it. And you know you want it, so you might as well give up now. In truth, wanting to satisfy some fleshly desire is the most ordinary and common thing in the world. And anything we do to fight any of it is a victory worth celebrating. It's natural, in the most literal sense, to want something wrong. You have a sinful nature, so do I. It takes submission to something supernatural, God's spirit, to not just go the way you're wired. To make this distinction, one is reminded of the proverb, "You can't stop the birds from flying over your head, but you can keep them from building a nest in your hair." The point being, you have the thoughts, and you will, but it's choosing to entertain them, to stoke the fire, where it becomes a problem. I had a friend in high school who was Catholic, and the nuns told him that if he had impure thoughts for more than 3 seconds, that he was in sin. So he would think about naked women while counting off 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 3, stop. You'll be shocked to hear that this wasn't an effective strategy for combating lust. The flip side of the notion that if I'm part of the way down the road of backsliding, then I might as well fall off, is this idea that if we push ourselves right up into the danger zone of falling for the temptation, then we'll get some benefit and none of the backsliding. You know what I mean. The guy who's struggling with porn but reads Maxim for the articles. Sounds appealing, but never works. In truth, when we do this, we just backslide. If you put yourself in a high-risk environment and you have a bad day, you're going to fall off, simple as that. The solution for much of this is the old 12-step maxim about watching your people, places, and things, especially the people. It is unbelievable how prone we are to act like the people around us. Much of what we would otherwise call character or morals or responsible behavior has to do with the kind of people we're around. I remember in college I had a sociology class where they showed us these fascinating films of experiments that would probably be illegal today. One that stuck with me was an experiment where they had a test subject go into a room and fill out a form and wait for his or her number to be called. The test subject then went into a room full of people who were hired actors. These actors had been told 2 things. Act like you're another test subject filling out forms, and then don't react to anything that happens in this room. Then they started pumping smoke into the room as if the building was on fire. Crazy, right? Well, in most cases, the subject looked up, saw the smoke, looked at the other people in the room, and assumed that if nobody else was freaking out, then there wasn't anything to it. In one memorable clip, they showed this guy sitting waist deep in smoke, casually filling out his form, and having to hold it up to his face to make sure he could see the text properly. You need to be around people with the sense to know that where there's smoke, there's fire. Sometimes it's as easy as spending your casual social time with good, solid Christians who are holding you accountable and encouraging you. You'll inevitably pick up their behavior and start to handle things the way they do. Let me give you one more bonus, secret, ninja-level insight on temptation. I was speaking a few months back with a brother who was recovering from a major addiction, and he said that he was really struggling. And I asked him, what was making it tough on him? And he listed 6 or 8 little things that were going wrong and driving him nuts. I smiled at him and asked, how can you let these little things get to you? You've overcome enough temptations and problems from your past to make this stuff look like child's play. How can this stuff be taking you out? He just shook his head and said, it's always about the little things. And he was right. When it comes to the big temptations, you can see them coming, and you've already got your guard up on them. But it's the little things that sneak in under your radar and begin to pile up that start to take you out. So pray about those little things. Take little moments of retreat when you need to, and really clear the decks of those little frustrations and fears and resentments and guilty feelings. The little things matter, and God cares about those little things. Hebrews 4:15-16 says, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need.